Track 2. Hello and welcome to the news recorded on Wednesday, the 5th of April. I'm Sue.
I'm Margaret.
And I'm Joyce.
Your sound engineers this week are Martin and John. Now, this week we would like to welcome the following new members. That's Frieda Bacon, Phyllis Cumberbatch and Clifford Lewis. We really hope you will enjoy receiving your discs. We'd also like to say a very big thank you to the listeners who have kindly sent us a donation last week towards the funding of our Talking News and Magazine, and they are Joan Simmons and Janet Billingham. Once again, thank you very much for your donations. They really count towards the running of the Talking News and Magazine. And now Margaret will start us off with the news.
A man has appeared in court over the murder of a mother and son. After it emerged, he had been helped by members of the family he allegedly stabbed in the West Midlands. Aaron Barley, 23, did not live at the family's home in Greyhound Lane, which was the scene of the stabbings in Stourbridge, but had been assisted by the tragic Wilkinson family over the past year. Barley is accused of stabbing Tracy Wilkinson, 50, and her son Pierce, 13, to death at their family home. He is also accused of the attempted murder of 47-year-old Peter Wilkinson, who was found with stab wounds. Mr. Wilkinson remains in a stable condition in hospital after suffering serious injuries to his back and chest. It had been previously claimed Barley, who had no fixed address, had been taken in by the Wilkinson family. However, a statement issued by the Wilkinson's daughter Lydia, who was away at university when last week's tragedy took place, strenuously denied this. She confirmed the family had assisted Barley in the past 12 months, but he had never lived at the property. She added the family did not provide refuge for homeless people. Lydia's statement said, contrary to press reports, the family did not provide refuge for homeless people, and the suspect had never lived at the family home, but had been assisted by the family in the past 12 months. Lydia's statement came after Barley appeared in court, charged with double murder and attempted murder. Barley appeared at Birmingham Magistrate Court on Saturday, just after 10 a.m. He spoke only once during the six-minute hearing after the court clerk asked him to give his name and address. He said, Aaron Barley, and I ain't got one address. Barley had his right arm in a sling and was wearing a green hospital-style gown and trousers.
Drivers on one of the Black Country's busiest roads are now being watched even more closely after new speed cameras were installed. Anyone going over 40 miles an hour on a notorious stretch of the Birmingham New Road could now expect to see a flash followed by a notice on their doormat of points on their licence or a fine. The cameras have been put up near the junction of Woodcroft Avenue on the Tipton and Dudley border, following persistent calls for safety measures, and will be passed by thousands of vehicles every day. Old speed cameras remain in place, but have been switched off since 2013. Campaigners said drivers have been routinely speeding down the road, posing a danger to people pulling out of the Foxhards estate. Dudley North MP Ian Austin has also described speeding on the road as a real problem. The stretch is also close to major junctions heading into Dudley, including Priory Road and Tipton Road, Dudley. Dudley councillor Ken Finch was among those to call for cameras in the hope of preventing accidents and said he hoped that motorists would think twice about how fast they were going. He said, I'm delighted that the cameras have gone up and hope it will improve safety along that particular stretch. It's a dangerous road. Cars come really fast down there. Drivers will have to be responsible and they will be punished if they don't take heed. This is the result of us getting in touch with residents and highways officers at the council. We had to do something, and fingers crossed, it works. The 40 mile per hour Birmingham New Road was recently named among the top five roads in the Black Country where drivers have been caught speeding during 2015 to 16. A total of 428 motorists were caught out by mobile police cameras, with the fastest clocked at 92 miles an hour.
The Black Country schoolboy who designed the new pound coin says he's more focused on his upcoming exams than the coin's release. David Pearce beat more than 6,000 other entries in a nationwide competition to have his design featured on the tail side of the 12-sided coin. His idea features a rose, a leek, a thistle and a shamrock, the four national flowers of the nations of the United Kingdom. The 17-year-old from Walsall said, "I'm quite humbled to be able to have a part in the creation of the new coin. It's a nice experience. I'm excited the day is finally here, but I've got A-levels to focus on now. I've put this to the back of my mind." David was encouraged to enter the competition 2 years ago by his design and technology teacher. He followed the broad brief. Entrants were only told the coin would have 12 sides, be bimetallic like the £2 coin, and needed to unambiguously represent the UK, and sketched various designs. After numerous drawings, he hit upon the idea of using the four national flowers. He said, "I thought it might be a good thing to have a go at." He submitted his design just 2 hours before the deadline and was surprised when he was pulled out of class to answer a phone call in March 2015. On the other end of the line was the then Chancellor, George Osborne, who informed the Queen Mary's Grammar School pupil that his design had been selected as the winner. The government says the new coin, which resembles the old threepenny bit, will be the world's most secure coin in circulation. More than 2.2 billion old coins will now need to be replaced.
More than 2,500 homes in Wolverhampton remain empty, despite more than 8,300 people being on the waiting list for a council property. New figures show that there are currently 2,668 homes standing empty in the city. Of these, 234 are council properties, while 2,420 are private rental properties, and 14 are other council-owned properties. These 14 other properties have been earmarked for other uses like regeneration projects, education facilities, and sheltered accommodation flats for families. It was also revealed that just 1,042 affordable homes have been built in the city between 2006 and 2014. A Wolverhampton Council spokesman said the figures in the private housing sector are improving, and what must be factored is in the figures related to all residential properties that are empty, including those that have been empty for a relatively short period, less than 6 months. Properties remaining empty for this relatively short period is part of the normal functioning of the housing market in relation to sales and purchases. Through the council's empty property strategy, more than 1,000 privately owned houses, which has been left unoccupied, often in a poor condition, have been brought back into use since 2010. This is achieved by offering advice and assistance through two compulsory purchase orders. It follows the recent news that three empty homes that have been blighted communities in the city are all to be bought back by the council. Properties of Goodyear Avenue, Low Hill, Bushbury Lane, Bushbury and Allen Road, Whitmarines are about to be acquired under the empty home strategy. The houses have become magnets for antisocial behaviour, with vandals managing to get inside and damage them, causing a nightmare for people living close by. The Low Hill property has been unoccupied since 2005, the Whitmarines house since January last year, and no one has lived in the Bushbury home since 1993.
Snails are at the centre of a bizarre cash row between shopping centre bosses and Dudley Council. The owners of the Trident Centre in Dudley have been accused of using snail farming to avoid paying business rates on one of its units. Some firms are eligible for tax exemptions if buildings are being used for agricultural purposes, such as fish farms. But after investigating, local authority chiefs were not happy where the trail led them and took owners of the High Street complex and Atlantis Holdings to court. Magistrate ruled in favour of the authority, but Atlantis deny any wrongdoing. John Sykes, chairman of Atlantis, said a tenant was using part of the sixth floor of the centre to breed snails and the firm would be fighting the ruling. He insisted that Atlantis had shelled out tens of thousands of pounds in business rates and would never try and get out of paying tax that they owed. He said, "We have never tried to and never would avoid business rates. This is an ongoing legal matter and another example of the council trying to muddy the water, being underhanded and deceitful to the people of Dudley. It is a travesty." The council chief's executive, Sarah Norman, said, "On February the 23rd, the council took court action against Atlantis Holdings for business rate avoidance. Atlantis Holdings were seeking to avoid payment of business rates on a building owned by them by representing to the council that a tenant company was in occupation. That tenant company was allegedly breeding snails in the building. This was not accepted by the council, and in a court case against Atlantis before Dudley magistrates in February 2017, a liability order was granted in the council's favour. It comes after Trident Centre bosses revealed that they were pulling the plug on a proposed redevelopment of the town centre site over what they called a lack of dialogue with the council."
Poundland has put the old 99p stalls business into administration after closing around 60 stalls. The Withenhall-based A Pound for Everything business bought the rival budget chain in a £55 million deal 18 months ago. Most of the 250 99p stalls have been converted to Poundlands, but 60 stalls were left over. They were all closed down in the first 3 months of this year, and nearly all the staff have transferred to nearby Poundland branches. The separate 99p stores company has now been placed in administration with Alex Partners, who will handle the company and its liabilities. The 99p stores takeover was delayed for months by a competition watchdog investigation that finally found no cause for concern. But the hang-up resulted in substantial additional costs for Poundland when it came to absorbing the business and converting its shops. It tried to speed it up, but the cost of the takeover punched a big hole in Poundland's 2016 profits, and it left Poundland vulnerable to a takeover bid by South African retail group Steinhoff, which paid £610 billion for it last year. A spokesman for the business said, "It's no secret that the previous management of Poundland had difficulties digesting its 99p stores acquisition. However, we've completed the store closure programme that addressed the remaining overlaps from that 99p acquisition, and importantly, with very limited impact on jobs because we have stores located near to those we're closing. The administration has no impact on Poundland itself, which, of course, is a robust, thriving business serving over 7 million shoppers a week. Founded in the Black Country in 1990, Poundland now has more than 700 UK stores, with others in Spain and Ireland. As well as its headquarters in Withenhall, it operates a major depot at Bilston, together employing around 700 people.
RBS has closed its main branch in Dudley Town Centre over fears staff and customers are not safe following three raids. The Royal Bank of Scotland branch was closed temporarily in February after raiders struck, and bosses have now confirmed it will not reopen. A spokesman for the bank said, "The safety and security of our customers and staff are of utmost importance to us, and unfortunately there have been a number of incidents over the past few months, including 3 raids, which has resulted in this being compromised." The bank first closed following a robbery on February the 3rd, where a man threatened staff with a knife and stole cash before fleeing. The spokesman said, "Due to the recent security incidents, we have taken the difficult decision to keep the branch closed on a permanent basis. Please be assured that this is a decision we have not come to lightly, but we feel we have no alternative." The spokesman said bosses would now begin the process of communicating with customers affected by the closure, particularly vulnerable and regular visitors. He added, "RBS will ensure there are a range of alternatives for people in the area to continue banking with us, tailored to the needs of our communities and reflective of the way our customers live their lives." Dudley MP Ian Austin asked RBS to reconsider its decision. He said, "I'm very sorry to hear about this. We can't afford to lose another business in the high street. So I have asked RBS to look at it again. Of course, the safety of their staff must be paramount. But I want to know whether there are security improvements that could be made viable. 3 armed robberies took place at the bank over the space of 5 months. Police were called following robberies on October the 5th, January the 3rd and February the 3rd. A 47-year-old man has been arrested on suspicion of robbery following the February the 3rd incident."
A former mayor has accused the council of weak management for spending thousands of pounds on a pointless investigation into claims of racism. Councillor Ian Brookfield, who was Wolverhampton Mayor in 2015-16, and Councillor Steve Evans, the authority's Cabinet Member for Environment, are set to appear in front of the Standards Committee over an alleged breach of the Council's Members' Code of Conduct. The 2 Labour Fallings Park councillors are alleged to have racially abused members of the public at the council's election count at Aldersley Leisure Village in May last year. They have both denied the claims. A police investigation found neither councillor had a case to answer, but the authorities' council's top legal officer, Kevin O'Keefe, launched an internal probe, hiring a private investigator to look into the allegations. A furious Mr. Brookfield said, "The police had already conducted a thorough investigation into these allegations. They closed the book on it. This pointless investigation has ended up costing the taxpayer a 5-figure sum. It has been a complete waste of time and money. It is weak management on the part of the officers." The authority refused to confirm the cost of the investigation, which lasted for more than 3 months and saw 19 potential witnesses interviewed. Mr. O'Keefe said, "In July 2016, I received a written complaint making an allegation about the conduct of 2 councillors. As the council's monitoring officer, I am duty bound to investigate any allegation. In line with the agreed procedure set out in the council's constitution, the investigator's report will now go before the council's standards committee." The standards committee meeting was due to take place behind closed doors on March the 28th, but was cancelled. It is set to be rescheduled for later this month. Mr. Brookfield, who is a member of the committee, will stand down from his position on the 6-strong panel for the duration of the hearing.
As a bird of prey that normally thrives near coasts, you may not expect to see a peregrine falcon flying over Wolverhampton. However, with 5 or 6 pairs across the Black Country in Birmingham, according to West Midlands bird recorder Kevin Clements, they can be spotted. Capable of flying at faster than 200 miles per hour, peregrine falcons are some of the fastest birds in the world and hunt medium-sized birds like pigeons and small ducks. Keen birdwatcher Hughie King from Bilston snapped one falcon perched high on the tower of St Peter's Church in Wolverhampton and said, "It's got more and more common over the years. They find perches on churches and office blocks. We've been spotting them for around 3 or 4 years, and it has become a well-known secret between birdwatchers that they have been around for a while. All the pigeons around too means they have plenty of food, so that plays a part. Walsall have them too, on top of the town hall. Peregrines have adapted to towns and cities now." Mr Clements added, "They are well established in the area. Members of the public may not have been aware, but if you look up when you are walking through the city centre, you may just catch one flying over or perched high on a building."
More than £10 million worth of cuts will be made to Staffordshire Fire and Rescue Service in the next 3 years, which will likely see jobs axed. Bosses have stated between now and 2020, the organisation will get smaller and there will be more reliance on volunteers. A total of £10.2 million needs to be saved in the period with the largest cuts, £6.4 million being made to response. The sweeping changes have been broadly outlined in the authority's latest corporate safety plan. There are currently 330 full-time firefighters and 395 retained firefighters, as well as 213 support staff and 114 volunteers on the books. When asked, the authority could not confirm whether firefighters would be axed, but the 32-page document indicates redundancies will be made across the organisation. It states the authority is committed to ensuring that the staffing structures at all levels are appropriate and as efficient and effective as possible. Part of this identified savings has already been delivered with more streamlined executive team. Options for further establishment savings will continue to be developed and supported by a robust and fair voluntary redundancy programme. The plan adds, "The result of our future transformation is that the service is likely to be smaller, utilising volunteers in wider areas, using different and improved technologies and approaches to provide prevention, protection and response activities." The authority has said between 2014 and 2016, the number of incidents attended has reduced by 15%, and in the future, more emphasis will be put on preventing fires.
A senior Black Country councillor has been declared bankrupt following a near decade-long row with a widow over £30,000 that she gave to him and his wife. Councillor Richard Marshall, cabinet member for Leisure at Sandwell Council, was alleged to have failed to repay the five-figure sum, said to have been given to him as a loan. However, the councillor claims that the money was given to his wife as a gift by Diane Hirschberg after the couple supported her following the death of her husband. Legal action was launched against Councillor Marshall, ward member for Smethwick, and he was ordered to pay back the money as well as legal costs, which saw the total rocket to almost £85,000. When he was not able to come up with the cash within a 28-day time limit, bankruptcy proceedings were launched, which were supported at Birmingham County Court. Councillor Marshall, who was elected in 2014, claimed that he offered to pay back the money, which was originally which had originally changed hands in 2009, in £1,000 instalments, but that this was refused by the claimant's solicitors. Solicitor Gareth Ruddock, a partner with the FBC Manby Bowdler, said, "Our client, Diane Hirschberg, issued a claim against Richard and Marie Marshall, by which she sought to recover a significant sum of money that she alleges was a loan to Mr. and Mrs. Marshall, but not paid back to her. Mrs. Hirschberg put the matter in our hands, and as a result, a court order was made in September 2015 entitling Mrs. Hirschberg to the return of monies, with interest and costs. The full payment has not been received to date. Therefore, Mrs. Hirschberg petitioned the court for a bankruptcy order against Richard Marshall. The petition to the court specified a sum of £84,734.34 was owed to Mrs. Hirschberg. The petition was heard before Birmingham County Court, where Mr. Marshall was declared bankrupt by order of the court. Following the hearing, Councillor Marshall said, "She gave my wife a gift of £30,000. She lived with us for a good while and wanted to give her some money for helping her at a bad time in her life. She said she was going to give us some money. She had got a lot of money. If she was broke, there would have been some hesitation. I'm devastated it's got to this point. At the end of the day, this does not affect the role that I have been doing."
There has been a drop in the number of GPs working in the NHS despite government aims to recruit more, figures show. Provisional data from NHS Digital shows there were 34,050 full-time GPs at the end of December 2016, which is 445 fewer than in September 2016, when there were 34,495. The government has a target to recruit 5,000 more GPs by the year 2020. Professor Helen Stokes-Lampard, chairwoman of the Royal College of GPs, said, "These figures are a huge blow, especially considering the recent efforts we know have gone into building the GP workforce." She said a drop of over 400 GPs was dreadful when we so desperately need thousands more in order to cope with ever-growing patient demand. She added, "It is clear that current efforts to recruit more GPs and make general practice an attractive profession must be stepped up further, and we will continue to work with Health Education England and others to help wherever we can." Dr. Krishna Kasarani, GP Lead for Education, Training and Workforce at the British Medical Association, the BMA, said, "These figures underline just how far we are from meeting the government's own target of recruiting and retaining more GPs as we near the one-year anniversary of the GP Forward Review in England. Despite the constant promises from ministers that the GP workforce would be increased by 5,000, the number of full-time GPs has fallen once again, while the overall number has stagnated. While there have been encouraging increases in other healthcare professionals in general practice, what we really need are GPs who can deliver more appointments and other frontline services to meet rising patient demand."
A Black Country bricklayer who came out of his home armed with a large knife while parents were picking up their children from school has been given a suspended sentence. Darren Lilly, aged 25, admitted a fray when he appeared before Wolverhampton Crown Court. Miss Rachel Pennington, prosecuting, said parents were picking up their children from the school in Westminster Road, West Bromwich, when Lilly came out of his home armed with the knife. One witness told police how he held it in a jabbing motion, and it was clear his behaviour was reckless. Mr. Simon Birch, defending, said Lily had witnessed a man being stabbed in the past, for which a man was convicted and sentenced for murder. He said since then, Lily claimed to have been subjected to a campaign of intimidation and harassment by members of the dead man's family. The murder had a deep psychological impact on him and is still in an emotional state, Mr. Birch said. Windows in his home had been smashed and paint had been thrown at his property, the court heard. These matters were reported to the police, but no convictions followed, added Mr. Birch, who said that at the time Lily picked up the 9-inch knife, as he believed members of the other family had been armed. He stressed it was never the intention of Lily to use the weapon. He simply wanted to ward off what could have turned out to be an attack. There is a significant history between these parties, added Mr. Birch. The fact this incident happened outside his own front door speaks volumes. Recorder Ben Mills said it must have been a frightening situation for the parents collecting their children. He said that the production of a knife in any situation was a serious matter, but ruled he would spare Lily further time in custody after being told he had been held for 5 months on remand. Lily, now of no fixed address, admitted a fray, and he was given a 15-month jail term suspended for 18 months and told to carry out 100 hours unpaid work in the community. He was further told to pay £1,000 towards the costs of the case and made the subject of a restraining order.
And with that final news item from Margaret, will now make way for this week's notices. So it's goodbye from Sue.
Bye-bye from Margaret.
And goodbye from Joyce.